best friends and next door neighbors, Willow and Lillian, spill the tea on murder, mysteries, and other things that go bump in the night. So get your favorite teacup ready, and let's get into it. Welcome to Cruelty Podcast. This is Lillian, and with me is Willow.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
How's it going?
It's going.
It's hotter than hell today. Like, I have to say it because I want to complain. Outside. It's just so hot. But we have a cold front coming through, so we can live again.
Yes.
We can wear a hat. You can't wear a hat in this heat. It's not hat weather. Anyway, we're continuing on with Survivor Month, and we want to bring you, like, not only cases you may have heard before, but cases you definitely haven't heard before.
Yeah.
So that's what we're doing today.
Really shedding light on stories that don't get talked about and don't get heard and don't get seen and don't have voices.
So, that's really important. Yeah. So this one, this is an important one.
This is the case of Ranelle Harper. Had she not survived, as per our theme, had she not survived, she would have been just another one of those missing and murdered Indigenous women or two spirits that go unnamed, uncharted.
Never found.
Never found. And, you know, and if these, if they are found, they're found by their families. Their families are the ones doing the searches. Their families are the ones doing, you know, finding and recovering their loved ones.
Printing up the flyers, gathering search parties. Yeah. And, you know, we covered that in the Stolen Sisters episode, which I will link in the description of this episode. And I will, again, if you go to that episode, then you can go to all the different places to donate for missing and murdered Indigenous women.
I also, this one is heavy on links. So I've got a million links in this too.
All them links.
So all them links. Click on them. And I do have, we'll get to it at the very end, but I do have a couple organizations that will, you know, put funds where it needs to go.
And at the end of this episode, I will have an update on the Christy Chin case, which I covered last month.
Yeah.
So, and away we go.
Yep. So, Ranelle Harper, she was only 16 years old when she was assaulted and left for dead while just trying to walk home, doing what most teenagers want to do on a Friday night, hang out with their friends. She was a member of the Garden Hill First Nation in Manitoba, Canada, which I had to look on the map because I don't know where anything is at all.
No.
And I found it really interesting that the place that she's at, the Garden Hill First Nation, their reservation is literally directly north of where we're sitting right now. Like if you drew a line straight up, through, it goes Arkansas, and then right above us is Missouri. Above that is Iowa, Minnesota, and then above that is Manitoba. And I had to write this down because we are not taught geography in school or history.
Still don't know where the Dakotas are.
It's right next to all that.
Don't tell me that. It just, my brain just goes, what?
Yeah, but if you just go straight up from us, that's where she is. The location of their community is actually in a fly-in community. Have you heard of this?
I have heard of fly-in communities.
I have never heard of this. And then whenever I looked at the geography, I was like, oh, that's why. Because it's like rivers and lakes, like all
mountains. Yeah.
It looks like the landscape looks like crochet. If you understand,
yes.
Like it's so, it's just a bunch of like landways and islands and stuff all strewn about, and it's very, very obviously very cold. It's very
inaccessible.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, the only way in is to fly in, and so all of their food and all of their resources, any help, has to be flown in. So they're a remote location. So that being said, she had to go away for school, as did a lot of reservation children.
Yes.
But she was born in 1998 to parents Julie and Caesar Harper. Her family is, like, really cool. Her uncle, Elijah Harper, was a provincial politician in the area who was well known for standing up for his people against the government's ever-changing amendments. David Harper was their council chief, who was also a relative of hers. He actually met with the Pope to demand clean drinking water as a fucking human right and not something just designated for companies who can purchase it.
Fuck you, Nestle.
Absolutely. So Rennell comes from this type of family that I think they're, like, I don't know, very admirable from what I can see. She comes across as a very, very shy person, and that's basically, like, the overall description of, like, her demeanor, is that she's very, very shy. She doesn't really like to speak in front of people that she doesn't know, but she has a very strong heart, just absolutely strong heart. She, in a lot of the interviews, and I have them linked, you can tell how nervous she is as she's speaking, but every now and then she'll, like, kind of side-eye, you know, one of her relatives that's standing next to them. And so you can just tell that, yeah, she's shy. She's playful as fuck. She has such a warm energy and, like, personality to her loved ones. I think she's just very cut off from everyone else, which I totally understand. But, she attended the Indigenous Winnipeg High School that was actually owned, maintained, and attended and taught by several First Nations committees. So it was kind of like a modge podge of, like, all of the different, you know, communities in the area. She was fluent in both English and Oji-Cree, which is an Ojibwa language. And she was very intelligent, very fun. And on Friday night, November 7th, 2014, she was just like any other Friday night. Her and her friends were hanging out. They were actually celebrating the end of term. You know, they were like, oh, finally. It was like, you know, their big night of a big exhale. And so around midnight, it was time for her to go home, and Rennell couldn't find her friends anywhere. And so two guys that she had met there said that they would help walk her home. And so she was like, thanks. So they seemed very friendly. They were walking with her and talking and small talk and all of that. Nothing seemed suspicious at all until they got to the Assiniboine. I probably mispronounced that. Assiniboine River. There was a bridge overpass, and as they walked underneath the bridge, it was like night and day. They went from being, like, chummy friends to a full-on assault.
God.
Out of nowhere. They not just, like, physically assaulted her. They sexually assaulted her underneath that bridge, and they beat her to within an inch of her life, what they thought to death.
She was dead, yeah.
They thought that she had died. And they threw her into the icy rivers. And somehow she was able to stay conscious and float down river. And she swam to shore, where she, as she's climbing on shore, she's screaming help. She's screaming for help. And then she hears footsteps. And then she sees two figures coming towards her. They had heard her calls for help. And it was her two assailants.
Yeah, I figured.
Oh, I didn't think I was going to cry. Okay.
That's so terrifying.
It's terrifying. It is an absolute nightmare.
It's like a fucking horror movie.
It is worse than a horror movie.
I can't imagine.
No. And yeah, she just goes from, like, thinking that, you know, oh my God, I'm being saved,
so I got to fight for my life again.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
And, like, she's still in high school.
That's a baby.
And they had come back, and they had found her again, and they were going to make sure this time. They used some sort of weapon. Later on, they couldn't identify what weapon was used on
one
her.
One object or something?
Yeah, lots of... She was riddled with blunt force trauma. They beat her over and over and over until they thought for sure she was dead this time, and they left her there on the banks of the icy river. She was found at 7 a.m. that morning by local construction workers. They called an ambulance. They used their coats to keep her warm. Initially, when she got to the hospital, she had no pulse.
Wow.
But somehow, she survived.
I'm going to guess the cold temperatures are what kept her from brain death.
Mm-hmm. And oh, yeah.
That's often the case. Hypothermia and, like, some drowning victims, if the water is very cold or the outside is very cold, it kind of slows everything down.
Yeah.
So that if you get to the person in enough time, it actually prevents more damage from, like, anoxic brain death, which is where you don't, yeah. you're not breathing, so your brain dies from lack yeah. of oxygen. Yeah, I was just actually reading about it.
Fascinating.
The other day. It's fascinating. So here's my useless knowledge.
It reminds me of the, like, not to derail at all, but, like, it reminds me of the frogs that, like, freeze over winter.
Yes. And it's kind of a similar mechanism mm-hmm. in the human body. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it reminds me again of the Jennifer case where the ants biting her kept her conscious.
Right.
I'm sure the cold added to her suffering, but it likely saved her life.
Yes, 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 absolutely. That's a really interesting tie. I didn't tie myself there.
I've noticed that yeah. a lot in these yeah. cases. It's to me, they're like these little miracles, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. these little coincidences mm-hmm. that all line up. And I think it's almost like it's weirdly magical. And I don't know. I'm very moved by it.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. And I really like facts. I like cold, hard facts.
Me too.
You know, and
but there's something,
these little things,
these little divine
ignore.
Touches in there. You know what
you
I
really
mean?
Really can't ignore it.
It's
at
amazing.
But yeah. They brought her back. Her recovery was slow and gradual, but she did recover. And as soon as she could, she began to speak out. No matter how scared she was, no matter how shy she was, she had to stand up. She had to speak for other missing and murdered sisters of hers. She knew that that night she almost joined them and that she could have become a statistic. And so, since she didn't, she had to stand up. She couldn't stay silent. You know, forced silence on so many.
Yeah.
She had to use her voice. And so,
And this is before her assailants are caught.
Yes, this is all before her assailants.
So I want y'all to think about that. You know, wouldn't you? I would want to hide.
Yes, and that was the next thing that happened was right on that thought was that, you know, this is a minor child.
Mm-hmm.
She, you know, in most cases, in order to be safe, she would have to rename an anonymous.
Be under guard.
Be under guard, you know, kind of be in the shadows. But she told her parents that she wanted her name out there. She wanted to be seen and heard about this. And her parents had to agree with her on it, and they had to go to the police and be like, no, we want
well,
her name released.
Bastards tried to take away her agency.
Absolutely.
And she took it back.
She demanded it back.
I love it.
Absolutely. But yeah, that was not, you know, normal protocol to release the name of a minor, especially when the suspects were at large and they didn't know who they were. But yeah, within 2 weeks they were caught.
Fucking A.
Because of this, because
absolutely,
you know,
yeah.
releasing her name.
They wouldn't have fucking tried to find him if she hadn't made a stink about it.
Do you know how many sexual assaults are going on in those cities on those women? Mm-mm.
Yep.
You have to be specific, unfortunately.
Pretty much.
20-year-old Justin Hudson and a 17-year-old boy who went unnamed because of his age were charged in the attempted murder and assault. They were also charged with an assault of another woman from the same night as Rennell.
Oh, my God.
They pled guilty to two charges of aggravated sexual assault. And everyone immediately, like in the media, linked Rennell's attack with Tina Fontaine.
Yeah.
And if you're familiar with that case, Tina was a 15-year-old indigenous girl who was assaulted and found dead in the Red River. So yes. a lot of similarities there. And this was only 2 months prior to Rennell's attack. So a lot of people thought that this was the same attackers.
That's possible.
It's just there was no evidence to ever link them. I'm going to save my thoughts and opinions for after this episode and the commentary episode, but I do have a lot of them. But Tina Fontaine's death, along with the assault on Rennell, was just the catalysts that were needed to make the initial changes. December 2014, Rennell spoke to a crowd of more than 3,000 audience members of the Assembly of First Nations and spoke up about ending violence against young women. She urged the assembly members to demand a national inquiry, but the prime minister at the time said that missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, quote unquote, while tragic, need not be further studied, indicating that assaults on Indigenous women were often initiated by Indigenous men, therefore dealt by with local, not able to be dealt with by local police, meaning that that's the Rez's fault.
Yeah, so we don't want anything to do with
it. They want to wash their hands of them.
Of course they do. They just think it's like, you know, the problem taking care of itself.
Exactly.
And
they view the same way with, you know, people of color of all creeds.
Well, when I was researching missing and murdered Indigenous women, they would say things like, well, they're just all drunks anyway, so who cares?
That's the main thing that they say. Who introduced this continent to alcohol? Like, come on.
Their fucking ancestors. and even so.
That's not even a reason. I'm just mad. No, it's just alcohol is no substance use or abuse or anything to do with substance intakes does not diminish the person's humanity.
No, it doesn't diminish their worth.
No.
Or it doesn't give law enforcement an excuse to just not fucking bother.
Absolutely.
It's disgusting.
It's not like they're not drinking either. Come on. And the majority, honestly, and I'll get to it, but the majority of the cases where you'll see, you know, extreme alcoholism, it's because it's medicating abuse. We don't know how to deal with our trauma. It's too expensive. Come on.
There's no resources.
Have some fucking kindness.
There's no resources if you have money to pay for them, let alone these people who are on reservations, whose funding has been cut, who don't have any money, are locked in a cycle of poverty.
Yes.
And what follows with cycles of poverty? Abuse and addiction. Like, it's not fucking rocket science. And I'm so
I know. I'm really glad that we started doing this on Patreon, that we can have the let loose,
the commentary afterwards. Yeah,
because it really is helpful.
I'm gonna need to let off some steam.
Really, really though. But tragically, just a few months later, almost a year later, on July 17th, 2015, while Rennell was receiving treatment for her injuries in Winnipeg, her whole family was there in Winnipeg. The Harper family home caught fire on the reservation. Nobody was injured, but all of their belongings gone.
Was it an accident? Because I don't
think
so.
They investigated it, quote unquote.
Oh, air bunnies on that shit.
Big, huge air bunnies. But even though that there were, like, loads of, like, campaigns and fundraisers to get their family the things that they needed, they couldn't just, you know, sneeze a house together overnight.
That's not how that shit works.
It's not how it works. Even if you have all of the money in the world. Now, Rennell's school year was coming up. She went to a special school for Indigenous children. She, you know, was doing really well in school, right? She just had her midterms. Because of this house fire, they were no longer able to meet the requirements to go to the Indigenous school. Because their requirement was that they had to live in one of these remote communities, and since the Harpers no longer had a home, they no longer met this criteria.
Ooh. I'm just
so
mad.
Rennell had to be waitlisted and put into another school. So she not only went through assault,
She lost the family. They lost the family home.
Her whole body was beaten and broken beyond imagine. Okay. I didn't get a list of injuries because of her age, but let's just say it took at least a year or two of surgeries to repair her.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a miracle that she made it out alive. So she goes through that. She goes through treatment. She goes through the entire loss of her possessions, then switching schools.
That's too much.
On top of all of this.
And speaking out. And her activism.
Exactly. On top of all of this, she has activism. And she's still doing it. I wouldn't. There's no way I would be able to. I mean, like, she's so fucking strong. So yeah, while she's going through all of this, just a few months later, in November of 2015, she spoke at the Spirit of Our Sisters Gala in Alberta, and this was part of the First Nations of Canada's conference on missing and murdered Indigenous women, which, in combination with her efforts and the publicity of the Tina Fontaine case, the whole of the missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls movement, AKA all the mamas and the aunties, got together. This is what really started them fighting for their loved ones. This is what really got them together. Not that they weren't always fighting, but they weren't...
It organized.
It wasn't organized. Because it's devastation and loss. I mean, I have linked a few documentaries that I definitely encourage all of you to watch so you can see firsthand what these people go through, because it's like, it's one by one, their families are dropping like flies and they're gone, and there's no
without help. A trace.
They're gone. They're just fucking gone.
And I don't listen, like, these are small communities, y'all.
Mm-hmm.
Can you I just picture Eureka Springs. We have 2,000 people. Can you imagine if 10 of us just went missing,
right? Just gone.
Just the holes and the gaps in the mm-hmm. fabric of the community.
Mm-hmm.
And don't you think, y'all, that that's maybe the fucking idea?
Mm-hmm. And Indigenous cultures especially, but I know that a lot of other cultures agree that, excuse me, the woman is, you know, the matriarch of the family.
It's the social structure. She's what holds it together.
And especially a lot of Indigenous communities hold sacred the mother because, you know, you were once together. You know, you were in your mother's womb, therefore you are hers. And so it's just that extra that you're taking from the communities. You're taking the mother from the communities. You're taking the sister. You're taking something that they hold very sacred. Not that men, two-spirit, or anything that's not, you know, isn't sacred. It's just part of their culture. And it just hurts.
Women have always, throughout all cultures, have been the social bedrock of this society and any group. And when you start poking holes in that, I want y'all to think about, if you're in a small, let's say you're in a small community of 500 people and 20 of them are gone, who's doing their jobs?
Mm-hmm.
Just think of it that way, the economic, social impact. Mm-hmm. And watch whatever links Willow puts up. On my episode, I'll link to, I have links to other documentaries.
Mm-hmm.
Because y'all, you've got to see it. I mean, it hurts to see it, but you got to see it.
You have to see it. And again, I want to save my big spiels for later. But if these people looked like you and had the same features as you, and they were looking back at you, I think it would hit a little bit different.
Yeah.
Because that's how I feel. Being adopted, not knowing where I come from, but knowing that I don't look like the people that I grew up with, and then seeing people that look like me go missing. All of the missing posters were children that looked like me.
Yeah.
And I remember my parents pointing at them, saying, if you don't stay put, you know, my reprimanding was I was going to be one
threat.
Of them.
It was a threat, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's fucked up. But imagine if it was a bunch of, like, white babies.
The world would collapse.
Yeah, they'd just lose their fucking minds collectively. Mm-hmm. So I want us to, like, look at it through that lens.
Yeah.
And understand what it does to these communities and how it not only keeps the cycle of poverty and addiction and abuse in place, but it erases culture. It erases people.
It does.
And it's inexcusable that nothing's being done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's inexcusable that any mother should have to go out searching for her child, dig in the cold earth, and find the remains of their kid. That should never happen.
It happens every day.
They're out there looking for their babies, and they're the ones who find them. Mm-hmm. Often their bodies.
It's fucking disgusting.
Yeah, it's gross.
So, Renell. It's hard. This case is really hard.
Yeah, it's rough.
Renell's resilience and resistance resulted in the formation of the National Inquiry into the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women.
Goddamn, girl.
She pushed it.
Good for her.
I'm really proud of her. And that happened September 1st of 2016. You know how long this is going on. In spite of her fears, her shyness, her anxieties, Renell says that she wants to be a quote-unquote a voice for the voiceless. She speaks at events, encouraging her peers to stay strong and speak up. She has collaborated on a book called A Voice for Change with author Maggie DeVries. And since then, it is still a fight to be seen in the media. She was obviously not the first or the last voice to call out to media to gain attention for their missing and murdered loved ones. Loretta Saunders was an Indigenous woman killed while writing her honors thesis on the missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls in Canada.
God damn it.
Literally in the middle of writing it when she gets murdered. Her sibling, D.M. Saunders, just as a side note, formerly known as Delilah Saunders, I have a quote here. She came out as they came out as non-binary, formerly known. Delilah says, quote, I am non-binary and always have been, and I embrace all of me. I don't have a dead name, so I address by both Delilah, and I won't be upset. Ultimately, I do wish the respect of Diem, and I really do love that name. I think they chose a really great name.
It's pretty.
So just putting that in there because there's a lot of headlines, and they were really in the public eye under the other name. So
just for clarification.
Just for clarification. Yes. But they worked tirelessly day in and day out to campaign for their sister and all Stolen Sisters. And women and girls and two spirits. D.M. Saunders went on several news stations, talk shows, and anything that they could do to raise awareness, as well as writing a blog called Homicide Survivor, a homicide survivor's journey through grief. And I have it linked. It's an amazing blog. It tells their firsthand accounts of what they had to go through, just like, you know, going through the process of attempting to find their sister. They also fought against the Muskrat Falls hydroelectric project in Labrador, where they lived, working to end hunger strikes. And the methyl mercury levels in the waters were outrageous at this time, which, I mean, I wouldn't surprise me.
Fucking poison. That's poison, y'all.
Poisoning their fishing and hunting areas as well as their drinking waters. Absolutely disgusting. D.M. Saunders actually died September 7th, 2021. They were 29 years old. And it just really hit me because I was originally just looking for cases, and which, by the way, I found two survivor cases.
Only two.
This one and one other case, which I'm going to mention, but I only had one article. That's it. That's all I
found. While we're out here celebrating these other women all over the media, they get an article, and that's
one.
All.
One. When they found her body, they released a statement saying that their death was not criminal in nature. Although in 2017, their doctor said that they needed a new liver and they were denied donors. So really, was it criminal?
It's pretty criminal to me.
Yeah.
And did they need a new liver because of the fucking mercury in the water? Just saying.
There was also something to do with Tylenol that was prescribed.
Tylenol is real bad for your liver,
exactly.
Y'all.
And they used the fact that DM had turned to alcohol to cope with the loss of their sister.
Well, can I say something real quick about alcohols and livers, okay? So my mother was a raging alcoholic from the time I was 8 years old until her death about 4 years ago. And a lot of people would say that, oh, well, her liver killed her. False. Her pancreas. When somebody is an alcoholic, 9 times out of 10, it is not cirrhosis of the liver that does them in, but pancreatitis. Mm-hmm. Not saying that drinking doesn't damage your liver. It absolutely does. But blaming all of that on her liver is...
In the medical industry, it's false. They really hinge your alcohol intake on your ability to be accepted by donors because they think that you're
not deserving of it if you're an addict to alcohol.
They think that you are like self-inducing.
Yes.
And that you're going to just waste
the donation. Organ. And I have been a big...
One of my best friends died of liver failure because she was removed from a donor list as well. So
it just makes me really mad that we can't have humanity for people with addiction issues.
We're just humans.
They're human beings. Yeah. And for DM, I think it's really important to point out she hadn't been an alcoholic long enough to hurt her liver.
No, and she had quit. She had gone through recovery.
That they are literally actively trying to murder indigenous people mm-hmm. through every avenue they can find mm-hmm. is what we got to take away from this.
Absolutely. Now, the one other survivor case that I found is very, very kind of similar to a lot of these other cases. Where they bring alcohol into, you know, the finger-pointing blame game. 18-year-old Brooke Williams Manitowabi was another missing and murdered Indigenous woman survivor that, again, only got one article. She was walking home, and she had just gotten to the path that led to her mother's home where her 1-year-old daughter and her mother were waiting on her. And when she stepped foot on that path, a stranger came out of nowhere and attacked her. And I just want to warn, I don't know if I'm going to be able to post all of these photos on social media. I want to, and these are in the article, and they are so, but I am going to put them in the Patreon because these pictures are very important.
Yeah. Now, I just want to make it clear, when we post things on Patreon, we're not just saving it for our patrons. It's that we do not want to catch a ban from Facebook and Instagram, which is owned by Facebook. Yes. And you can catch a ban on Twitter, too. And we can't really tell these stories if we're silenced by being banned. Mm-hmm. So I'm not putting some pictures behind a paywall.
No, we're using Patreon as almost like our other social media because... We can't get banned
on. What I can do is make those pictures available to the public, which I will do, so you can come look at them.
It's important. I mean, it's not fun to look at, but put yourself in their shoes.
It's not fun to go through. I will tell you this, if this is triggering content for you, by all means, please do not look at
it. That was more of my point, was that this is very triggering. This is. But we need to see what they do to us.
And like all things I post on Patreon that are graphic in nature, there will be a little warning symbol ahead before the more graphic photos. Yeah, so just letting y'all know so you don't have to see anything you don't want to see.
Absolutely. But she, by the time she was found, her eyes were completely swollen shut. That's how badly she had been beaten. She fought, and they almost killed her, but she kept fighting. There's a quote from the blog, or from the, article? It's actually a news article that was written about her. And the quote says, "Her survival instinct kicked in several times. She ran for her life. She headed for the youth center where she knew that there were surveillance cameras. In spite of her efforts, the perpetrator, Mr. Jacko, preserved and brutally assaulted her."
Persevered
and brutally assaulted her. Evidence showed bruising all over her body. She received stitches in 3 places on her scalp, as well on her eyebrow and inside of her lip. Her back and buttocks were scraped, and her knees were raw from to the bone from being dragged. She dug her fingernails into the ground in attempts from stopping the dragging. A finger on her right hand is held together in pins right now, and her ankle were so swollen from Mr. Jacko's grip as he dragged her into the bush. One ankle was severely sprained. He used a stick to beat her. Her face was so swollen that she couldn't open her eyes.
Terrible.
This barely woman, 18-year-old, was walking.
Home.
That's it. She was walking. We're not even allowed to walk.
We're not allowed to walk.
Not only was this incident an absolute nightmare, but the whole experience of trying to seek help and justice was nearly impossible. Her mom got a phone call from the hospital saying that her daughter was in critical condition. She rushed up there, and they said that they needed to have a rape kit done on her, but they had to go to a different hospital in a different town at 3:30 in the morning to have this rape kit done. This woman had to carry her daughter because they wouldn't allow, they didn't have any transportation. They wouldn't even take this beaten and battered young girl to a hospital. They wouldn't.
Her mother had to
carry her baby in that condition.
My God.
Put her own baby in that car.
And drive her to try and get her justice.
When she's that broken and beaten. And just to add insult to injury, they didn't give her any further pain medication other than what they gave her for her stitches.
Why?
They said they gave a shitty excuse about needing more tests done before they gave her an added...
Fucking cunts.
Exactly.
Fucking cunts.
So by the time they got there to this other town, to this other place, this other hospital, to have a fucking rape kit done, and I'm sorry if you've ever had one.
They're real unpleasant.
It's... On top of all of that, her medication had worn off.
Oh, baby was in pain.
Riddled with pain. Riddled. And still had to go through with it because, you know, you only have that small window. The man who committed the assault was arrested a few days later, and it took 2 years for the trial for him to actually receive his sentence because he refused to admit guilt, which further gaslit Brooke.
Of course.
Her mother said that she would repeat over and over and over again to hospital staff and police, "It happened to me. What happened to me is real. It happened to me." Because she didn't think anybody believed her.
Because they fucking don't half the time. Don't. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, it's just me and Willow both been through that one. Yeah.
You know?
It happened to me as well.
Nobody believes you.
Nope. Your own relatives sometimes don't fucking believe you.
My best friends didn't believe me. Brooke's mother went on to say that before the assault, she was a kind and loving mother to her baby. She was nurturing. She was wonderful. She was sweet. And after a while, she had to move out of her mother's house and away from her child because all night she was screaming because of the nightmares.
Post-traumatic stress. Yep.
It was bad. It was so bad that her baby was scared of her, of being alone at night.
So it robbed her of that experience.
It robbed her of everything.
Of her motherhood. Yeah.
She had to move into it with her dad, which she then developed alternative ways of coping, like all of us do.
Because there are no resources.
Well, and look at, I mean, look at other animals. Other animals wait until the berries are, you know,
fermented
and then they get drunk. Like elephants do it. Monkeys do it. We're allowed to do it without feeling fucking guilt. We're allowed to numb ourselves if we need it.
I mean, yes, we're allowed. I just wish there were alternative methods and better treatments.
Absolutely.
But when there isn't any, I'm just asking for people to have fucking empathy.
Kindness.
Just some empathy, y'all. Mm-hmm. I mean, bless you, and you don't know the, like, freedom you have if you have never been assaulted in this way. But there is no peace for you after this happens to you.
Her mother was quoted as saying, "I watched the system fail my daughter on so many levels. It shouldn't have been that way when we needed the support. She didn't ask for these things to happen. She didn't consent to any of it. Therapy failed her. It was $100 a session, and because of schedule errors, a couple were they missed up on schedules and they ended up having to back pay several hundred dollars, which just broke the family even more because the family's also paying for all the hospital and everything. Yeah. So they couldn't afford therapy at that point. School failed her because there's a lot of... She tried to go back to school because she was 18, but she was still in the middle of senior year. And because of this assault,
she missed.
She missed. And then once she got better, she was too old. And so she couldn't even get, you know, her education that she needed. The system failed her.
Took 2 years.
Failed her. Her victim statement in court was read by her auntie because she obviously...
She couldn't do it.
So her auntie got up there and read it for her. And it says, I'm going to paraphrase this, but it says, "You don't know me." You were addressing Mr. Jacko. "You violated me intentionally, forcibly, sexually, with malice intent. My life has been on hold for 2.5 years. My structure collapsed. I would leave drained, silent. I would go home, turn off my phone for days. I would not speak. I learned what it meant to be re-victimized. You admitted guilt to the other serious crimes, but not to the one charge you did to me. I know from the plea you had no remorse, no feelings that what you did to me was wrong. Never once was I asked, never once did I give consent. You pushed me and my family through 2.5 years of inexplicable. Thank you, I hate that word. Unnecessary suffering and of anger, anguish, and uncertainty. The loss of time with my baby. You have no idea how hard I have worked to rebuild parts of me that are still weak. You took a lot of things away from me that are taking so long to regain. My damage was internal, unseen, and I carry it with me. You took away my worth, my privacy, my energy, my time, my baby girl's time, my safety, my intimacy, my confidence, my voice. Until today, what you've done to me doesn't expire. It doesn't just go away after a set of numbers or years. It stays with me. It's part of my identity. It has forever changed the way I carry myself, the way I live the rest of my life."
Yeah.
4 out of 5. That's 84.3%. 4 out of 5 Native women experience some sort of violence in their lifetime.
It's unacceptable.
It's an almost guarantee. If you're Native, you're going to experience violence. 56.1% have been victims of sexual violence. 55.5% have experienced physical violence by an intimate partner. 48.8% have experienced stalking. 66.4% have experienced psychological aggression by an intimate partner. We are labeled as things, not people. And you can do whatever you fucking want to us. Homicide is the third leading cause of death among Native women and girls aged 10 to 24. Third.
That should not rank.
From a blog by Danielle Barnes Smith in February 2021, "Stolen Sisters, Murdered in Indigenous Women of North America." She writes, "For Indigenous women and allies alike, it is important to bring this issue to light so no more Indigenous women are stolen in silence. The history of colonization has attempted to eradicate Indigenous cultures in North America. The colonizers stole children, disposed Indigenous people from their lands, and languages were driven to near extinction. Yet Indigenous people have survived. It is time for the colonizers to aid, not hinder, that survival."
Would be nice. Would be nice.
I have links and resources. But Native Hope is a good one, and amnesty.ca is a two really good places to go.
And Amnesty, also in North America,
is an international organization. Yeah, yes. As well. Mm-hmm.
Just need y'all to know that, because CA is a Canadian designation. Yeah, fucking sucks. And I'm just mad all over again.
I want it to stop.
Yeah.
I want the mentality of people who look like this are disposable. People that look
they're just drunk.
You can they're not real
citizens. Look, I'm going to tell you, oh, they're just drunk is the same as, oh, they're just savages. Mm-hmm. That's the same.
Same meaning.
Different. It does mean the same thing. It means they don't have value to me. Mm-hmm. And y'all, we need to care about this as much as we care about the other social issues. It's just as important.
And it's been in the background this whole time.
Just buzzing. You can barely hear it.
The men, women, and everything in between, everybody that's been backing the Stolen Sisters organizations, like, you'll see all of their platforms are not just Stolen Sisters. It's not like they're just here for Indigenous people. They're here for Black Indigenous people as well. They're here for, you know, other people's rights as well. Like, they're constantly,
like, I just get really, I get really tired of the whole idea that we can't care about multiple issues at
once. We can't focus one at a time.
We can't. Yeah. It's a blanket issue. Mm-hmm. And I think we can all know where we can start pointing. Mm-hmm. And it would be nice if they stop hindering and start helping.
Yeah.
But they won't, because, again, we're into power structures. And I'm not going to go off on a rant. I want y'all to go educate yourselves. Click the links. Watch some documentaries.
Watch those documentaries. They're so,
and don't shut up about it at fucking Thanksgiving, which is a crap holiday anyway. Make your racist uncle uncomfortable.
Show him those pictures.
And tell them to get the fuck out. You don't get no twerky.
Yeah.
Yeah. You okay? No. Okay. Listen, we love y'all. I'm not going to do business time on this, but I would like to give you an update on Christy Chin. It is the woman from Memphis, Tennessee.
She passed away last month.
Last month, like, in July. Like, a couple
weeks before the episode. Mm-hmm.
I believe it was July 9th. Mm-hmm. And she had been on her honeymoon in Fiji with her fiancé, with her husband. And she was found dead in the bathroom of the resort hotel room. She was wedged between the toilet and the wall. Her head had such severe lacerations from blunt force trauma, she could not be embalmed, because the embalming fluid would have leaked out.
Yes.
And there was, like, no way to stitch it up or anything. It was just that bad. And she had to be cremated. Her family couldn't even bring her body home. So the cause of the argument between her and her husband was they were at a nightclub. They had both had, you know, some drinks, of course, on your honeymoon. You go party, you have some drinks. And he started dancing very provocatively and sexually with another woman.
Ew.
Yeah. And so that's the update that I have on that case. I promised an update literally whenever I got one. He is still in jail awaiting trial in Fiji. Okay. Yes. Good. He is claiming via his lawyer that her death was an accident. He panicked and that he ran. That's why he got in a, like, fucking canoe and paddled to another island drunk. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you accidentally beat someone that hard.
No.
So he can go fuck himself. That's that update. We're going to be doing commentary on this episode on Patreon. It is our $1 tier. If you guys are interested in the commentary and want to participate later on Discord, patreon.com/cruelty. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, thank y'all. We love you. If all you can do to support this podcast is listen, you're appreciated. This episode, though, share it. Please. Share it everywhere.
Thank you.
Find us on your social media platform of choice. Linktree/cruelty has all of the links. Check out our Patreon for exclusive episodes, merch, ad-free episodes, live ghost hunts, and much more. Please be sure to subscribe. New episodes are uploaded weekly. Thank you so much. See you next time. Music and production by Willie Beats.